This is David Duke. This is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Live Web Radio Broadcast. Broadcasting to the entire world with news and information of vital importance to Europeans and people of European descent, wherever they may live upon the earth. Great to be with you. I'm still in Eastern Europe for a while. I'll be back in the States before too long, though. I look forward to seeing so many of you. I'll be making a few speaking engagements back home. I'm going into a series right now, as you know, on this program concerning anti-Semitism, on the roots of anti-Semitism. And I pointed out, for those of you who've just tuned in for the first time, that anti-Semitism basically has been defined, and the reasons for so-called anti-Semitism have been defined, by Jews themselves. In fact, more often than not, by Jewish extremists, that is, Jews that hold very strongly to an idea of Jewish supremacism and some sort of Jewish divine right over the Gentiles. That may sound a little wild to a lot of you listening, but I've documented that. In fact, I documented a lot of the recent Chabad Lubavitch writings and some of their power. In fact, they just had a recent party of the Chabad Lubavitch in the White House, of all places, and one of their rabbis was, in fact, instructing other Jews who work in the White House, and the new head of White House policy is himself Jewish, Mr. Bolton, Joshua Bolton. And by the way, Chabad believes that the purpose of Gentiles on the earth is to, quote, serve Jews, and that Gentiles have inferior souls, and that the Jews have to understand that Gentiles' reason for existence is basically to make Jewish life comfortable and fulfilled. In fact, one of the Chabad writings is pretty clear. It says that, and this is pretty wild, ladies and gentlemen, says that every Jew is the son of God. In other words, every Jew is like Jesus Christ. Of course, they hate Christ, but they say every Jew is the son of God, and therefore it is the purpose of the non-Jews to serve the Jews. Well, when you understand this kind of a role, and this is not something that's simply limited to Chabad Lubavitch. This is really in the core of what Judaism is in the Talmud. And that's one reason why that the Jews have not lost the integrity of their race over the centuries, over thousands of years, because they have taught an extreme hatred against Gentiles, a fear of Gentiles, and a great supremacy of themselves. That they are the sons of God. And this is what has prevented a lot of the intermarriage or the assimilation, which is one of those things, by the way, that Jews are always preaching about, is the danger of assimilation and how that will destroy the Jewish people. Interestingly enough, they work for every other people to assimilate. But the idea that Gentiles are somehow not human, and that's precisely what much of the Talmud says, and again, I have a lot of quotes on my website, davidduke.com. I urge you to check them out if you doubt what I'm saying here. I know what I say is controversial, but just because it's not the mainstream truth that you get in ABC, CBS, and NBC doesn't mean what I'm saying is not true. Throughout history, there has quite often been, quote, minority beliefs that were actually correct over the view of the majority. And today you have to understand, if we had an honest press, it would be easier to believe that what we're getting is the truth. But we have a press that is in fact controlled by that same very hardcore Jewish extremist minority. So we're going to go into white slavery. I brought up last time how, interestingly enough, Jews have had a pivotal role in the slave trade since even before the time of Christ. And Jewish scholars write about this, even boast about their power and their heading up by the slave trade. Not exactly the most reputable of positions. And, of course, tens of millions of Africans died in the Middle Passage in horrendous conditions. And I quoted from some of the Jewish chroniclers and Jewish historians that talked about the fact that most of these ships were owned, in fact, even run by themselves Jews. I find this interesting because when there's so much guilt assigned to Europeans for slavery, for the institution of slavery, such as in the southern part of the United States of America, or to many white countries around the world, and so-called colonialism. Of course, there's always been colonialism by every race, by the way, not simply Europeans. Europeans may have been more successful at it. They were more highly organized, and they had a higher technological ability as well, and a very strong and courageous will, and they tended to dominate. I'm not for colonialism today, but the guilt that they try to instill upon our people, ladies and gentlemen, it's constant. But have you ever noticed that even though these Jewish leaders talk about the heavy Jewish role in the slave trade, there's never any guilt assigned to them. There's never any feeling of remorse, any feeling of contriteness on their part. That's kind of interesting. Now today we're going to talk about white slavery. Prostitution, or white slavery, as it's aptly called, is another institution as old as civilization. Maybe one reason why it was called white slavery and is called white slavery is because it seems throughout history that the prime object of many people sexually has been what we call the Nordic aesthetic, or that Nordic style, or the white style woman. In fact, the blonde, light-skinned woman is still an ideal of beauty all over the world, and in fact, many mixed countries like Mexico, many others, you'll see the billboards having the blonde. There are blondes, indeed, in Syria when I was there. In fact, they have a very thriving Greek community there, and many of the original Syrians, in fact, were blondes. And I took some pictures. In fact, I posted a couple pictures of some of the billboards, patriotic billboards in Syria, and they show definitely blondish, light-skinned women representing the country and representing the patriotic Syrian person. You know, the it's still basically a much desired commodity. You know, the white woman. Let's be frank about it. Around the world, there's just something special about white women. Not just for white men, but it seems the other non-whites of the world prize white women, and you'll see this quite often. You know, there's just something about our women that is absolutely incredible and special. It's almost angelic. And this is something recognized almost universally. And maybe that's why they call it white slavery, because even in ancient times, the fair-skinned beauty of European women and little boys and girls brought a premium from the purveyors of perhaps the most brutal kind of slavery of all. And that was the sexual defilement of one's body. The subjection of countless innocents to the filth and pain of sexual degradation is a crime of enormous magnitude. Just as they dominated the organized slave trade, Jews dominated prostitution. It originally came about as a natural adjunct to slavery, as it took no special commercial acumen to realize that a female or a young boy slave could be rented out for sexual abuse. And fair European maidens could fetch great prices from the sultans of the darker nations. From the days of the concubines of King David to the modern madams of Xavier Hollander and Heidi Fleiss, Jews have dominated the sex business. The Talmud is obsessed with sexual connections of what it calls natural and unnatural kinds, unquote, of sexual relations of adults with little boys and girls, with bond maidens and with harlots. In the modern age, Freud and his colleagues in academia brought this perverted view of our natures into the classrooms and living rooms of America. Freud, with the help of the Jewish influence media, told Western society with a straight face that sexual and excretory organs are the most important factors in life, and that every male secretly desires to have sexual relations with his mother. And by the way, you can see it in the modern humor, as the Jews have got complete domination of our media, our fields of humor, and so forth. The tremendous emphasis on excretory, eschatology is what it's called scientifically, eschatological issues, is amazing. dare I say it, you know, the passing of gas and all sorts of excretory things. These are the common issues, it seems, in our media. Now, looking into the history of prostitution, I read about a maleficent deception Jews used in Central Europe during the last century. During times of famine or economic hardship, well-dressed, fast-talking Jews would go into peasant communities in Central and Eastern Europe and tell the parents of attractive Christian teenagers that their children could have a better life in America. America had a shortage of household labor. The Jews told the parents that after a short time, their children could pay off the cost of their passage and begin a new life in the land of freedom and plenty. In spite of the pain of being separated from their children, some of the parents would consent to such an arrangement, wanting the best for their daughters. But instead of finding a bright new life, tens of thousands ended up suffering in the brothels of the New World. In his book, Prostitution and Prejudice, Jewish historian Edward Bristow writes about the World Prostitution Network and clearly shows the prominent Jewish role in it. It's not hard to conceive of the reaction of many Eastern Europeans to the Jewish enslavement and degradation of tens of thousands of Christian girls. Bristow reveals that the center of the Jewish trade in Gentile women from Poland and surrounding regions was a small town called Auschwitz, which the Germans called Auschwitz. That simple revelation can bring much understanding to the recurrent Jewish and Gentile conflict. Jewish domination of white slavery continues to this day. In fact, it is on a much larger scale now than ever before in history. The New Orleans Times-Picayune, January 11, 1998, ran an article titled Slave Traders Lure Slavic Women. It was written by Michael Spector and distributed by the Jewish-run New York Times News Service. And it documented a Jewish-run white slave operation of huge proportions. The piece begins with a poignant story of how a beautiful, blonde Ukrainian girl, hoping to escape the poverty and despair of her village life, answered an ad in a small newspaper in her hometown promising work and opportunity abroad. She wound up as a sex slave in Israel. Here's a quotation from the article. She was 21, self-assured, and glad to be out of Ukraine. Israel offered a new world, and for a week or two, everything seemed possible. Then one morning, she was driven to a brothel, where her boss burned her passport before her eyes. "I own you," she recalled his saying. "You are my property, and you will work until you earn your way out. Don't try to leave. You have no papers, and you don't speak Hebrew. You will be arrested and deported. Then we will get you and bring you back." In Israel, the government does little to end the brutal slave system other than deport a small percentage of the girls they find with no immigration papers. Almost 1,500 Ukrainian women have been deported from Israel in the past 3 years. The deck is completely stacked against the Gentile women and in favor of the slave masters. For if they file a complaint against the slave master, they must remain in prison until a trial is held. Spector quotes the prison director at Nevatirtsa as saying she did not know of a single girl who chose to testify against her Jewish slave masters. The white slaver is thus protected by the Israeli system, while the victims are punished. Spector identifies both the prostitutes and their masters. He quotes an Israeli white slave master, Jacob Golan. "The women work there, like nearly all prostitutes in Israel, are Russian. Their boss is not. Israelis love Russian girls," said Jacob Golan. "They are blonde and good-looking and different from us," he said, chuckling. Unquote. Of course, Israel is not the only destination of the Eastern European women. The Jewish gangs in Russia, and I've talked about that over the last few broadcasts, the Jewish gangs in Russia that control the largest and most powerful and most brutal organized crime organizations in the world, the so-called Russian Mafia, which is really much more accurately labeled the Jewish Mafia, has stolen and kidnapped an estimated 400,000 women under the age of 30. They were lured from the Ukraine in the past decade, and that's just one of the former Soviet states. Spector quotes the International Organization for Migration as estimating that 500,000 Eastern European women are trafficked into Western Europe and around the world annually. Now, this is a tragedy of huge proportions that gets very little press. Moment Magazine, the, quote, magazine of Jewish culture and opinion, had an article on page 44 of the April 1998 edition called Hookers in the Holy Land. In it, they discussed the thriving prostitution of blonde Russian girls in Israel as a national institution. It goes on to talk about the customers, who even include rabbis riding bicycles to the whore houses. Quote, a good percentage of the customers are Johns in the lingo, are ultra-Orthodox Jews, pious men whose lives are guided by halakha, religious law, which tells them when they can or cannot, continue this, have sex with their wives. So on Thursday afternoons, boys' night out in Israel, busloads of Orthodox Jews travel from Jerusalem, Haifa, and points beyond to Tel Aviv for a few precious moments of passion in a massage parlor behind a sand dune or an alleyway. Other customers are accountants, lawyers, policemen, and politicians. Quote, the entire spectrum of Israeli society is keeping the hookers in business, claims Detective Sacker, a cynical veteran on the Tel Aviv Vice detail. Tel Baruch is so very absurd and so very Israel. That's the area of the prostitution. It blatantly goes on to describe the girls, who are mostly East European Gentile women, along with some Palestinians, as virtual slaves who are put on a slave auction block. Once the girls arrive in Israel, this is a quote, the crime bosses take over. The girls are usually taken to an auction house where the owners of the various massage parlors can bid on the talent. Each one offers a price, and the highest bidder gets the girl. The girls are virtual slaves. The article goes on to note that many of the prostitutes in Israel, especially those of Arab descent, encounter physical abuse from Jews who abuse them as an expression of their, quote, racial nationalist fervor. Quote, find their Jewish customers only come to them after Palestinian terrorist act to get their hands on their own brand of sexual revenge laced with racial nationalistic fervor, and they do so with hate and anger. In discussing the forged documents used to smuggle the girls into Israel, Spector notes that they have often been obtained from elderly Jewish women in Ukraine. Even so, Spector casually refers to the Jewish perpetrators of this international white slavery ring as, quote, Russian crime gangs or, quote, Russian mafia. It would simply be bad for Jewish public relations if the Times-Picayune had titled the article, Jewish Slave Traders Lure Gentile Women. Jewish writers on anti-Semitism never mention the Jewish domination of the slave trade or of prostitution over the centuries. They never point out that such Jewish activities could understandably lead to unfavorable attitudes and policies toward Jews. Imagine for a moment the worldwide media reaction if Gentiles were enslaving hundreds of thousands of Jewish girls, putting them on auction blocks, and subjecting them to indescribable brutalities. Consider the outrage that would follow from the Jewish media. Yet with millions of Christian girls becoming the victims of Jewish criminals, there is no moral outcry, no international cause trumpeted by celebrities and politicians. After my discussion of these issues on the national PBS program Black Perspectives in the News, attacks on me as an anti-Semite became even more shrill. As a young man, when I read about slavery in the South, my heart was touched by the tales of cruelty and suffering, so much so that I felt guilty. But as I learned the truth about the slave trade, I noticed that the same Jewish writers and producers and publishers who instilled guilt in me never once suggested that Jews had any collective guilt for their 2,000-year record of plying their trade in human flesh. Apparently, in the new morality of the Jewish press, learning about white exploitation of blacks is, quote, history. And learning about Jewish exploitation of both whites and blacks is called hate and anti-Semitism. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's my comments today about these roots of anti-Semitism. And interestingly enough, tomorrow I'm going to, if I get a chance, I have to do some traveling in the next few days, I'm going to go into the disloyalty issue. And that deals with things such as the incredible number of Jewish spies against America, not just Jonathan Pollard, but even many years earlier in the communist spy rings, where they dominated, incredibly so, considering their tiny amount of American population, and their history throughout European history and throughout world history, of their record of being a small minority in a nation and betraying the people they lived among for foreign powers. This goes a long way. You know, when I was at the American Renaissance, and I regret the question because I wasn't trying to cause any problem, the Jewish individual Michael Hart made a big issue out of something which should have been a small issue. But I talked about the internal destruction of the West that's been being driven by another group. It was discussed there, the Arab intrusion into Europe, the massive immigration. And certainly if that continues, it will affect European culture and heritage. And I want to preserve our European, Western, white, and Christian society. That's absolutely correct, I think we all do. But I also talked about the fact that, you know, we wouldn't have had this immigration except for the internal subversion that we had. And the same group, in fact, that opened the gates of Constantinople and really have 40 years of preparing and opening the gates of Europe and America to the massive immigration, you know, is a group that we have to deal with, that we should discuss. And I will talk tomorrow about the Jewish role in supporting the earlier invasions of Europe. I'll even go back to Egyptian times, and we'll talk about the whole controversy there between the children of Israel and the Pharaoh from their own perspective of their own writings. Until then, I want to tell you, I want you to have a very good day and evening, and I hope that you'll take the time to take this document. And this is a document. It's a spoken word, and I think sometimes spoken words are much more powerful than the written word. We are setting something in motion here, ladies and gentlemen, and I hope that my words can raise your passion and your dedication and can bring home the essential issues of what's going on. The Jewish supremacists have not only led us into this terrible war in Iraq, a war that's hurting America and resulting in the death of our young men and women there, and the maiming of tens of thousands, and the deaths of other innocent people, Iraqis and other people around the world, raising this terrible war, but they've literally enslaved millions upon millions of the most defenseless of our race, of our heritage, our women. And they've subjected them to terrible brutalities, terrible inhumanities. And I really believe that by standing up against the Jewish supremacists and these Jewish extremists, that I'm defending my people. And I really believe that the Jewish people themselves have a stake in rooting out these elements among their own, because that's what causes the tremendous reaction, the so-called anti-Semitism, that's resulted in so much suffering of the Jewish people. But you have to make sure that you understand that the Jewish element has also led to much suffering of our own people. I've talked about this before. I've talked about the role that they had in international communism, for instance, the Russian Revolution. Solzhenitsyn talks a lot about that in his latest book. And we must begin to confront this question openly. We must understand truly what anti-Semitism is, why it comes about, and we're not going to learn the truth simply from reading about it by people who are already quite biased in favor of the Jewish extremists, who have so much power in our media and government and support the criminal state of Israel and lead America into supporting this criminal state in complete violation of every basic interest of the American people. Well, that's about it. I look forward to seeing you tomorrow, and please let your fingers do the walking and your keyboards, and go to those blogs, get some links out for this program. Make sure that you let your friends and family know that this program's out there for them to hear and for them to get a greater understanding of the world in which we live in. Thanks so much, and I'll see you tomorrow. This has been a David Duke Worldwide Web Radio broadcast. For more information and to support our vital work, please visit www.daviddukes.com.